Thank you for listening to this lesson. We affirm that this lesson has inspired and uplifted you and given you practical tools you can use to divine...
Again. So, the last 2 weeks, we've been talking about how do we get back to the basics of living the spiritual life. In the first week, we talked about the idea of how do you live by faith. And we're going to really get into that a little bit more today. And then the next week, we talked about living as love. And then this week, we're going to talk about the strength to live from spirit. And if you think about it, you know, to live the spiritual life really takes a lot of strength. It takes the abilities to stay focused on the fact that you are a spiritual being functioning in a human body, having this experience, but not allowing it to knock you off your spiritual path. In my class in the college this past week, I showed a video on the college's classes on marketing. So the video was on the brand called You. How do you brand yourself? And it was a great speaker from India who is a great motivational speaker. First time I ever came across him on his videos. But he's very, very dark complected. And he was telling a story about doing a talk somewhere for some big organization. And the guy who was getting ready to introduce him, and he got his papers all mixed up, and he couldn't remember his name or anything. So he turned and he said, "So now let's welcome my colored friend from India." So he comes up, and he says, he just comes up, and he says, "Thank you very much." He says, "I just want to thank my non-colored friend for his introduction." So later, the organization came to him, because they were just devastated that this guy had done this, and asked him to sign a paper. They apologized and asked him to sign a paper that said he accepted the apology. So he did. He signed it. So later he's telling another friend of his about it, and he goes, "Why did you sign that paper? You could have sued them." He said, "Oh, yeah, the great American pastime." You're right. But what I wanted it to demonstrate for the students, which they really got, is how to, again, not let yourself get caught up in that petty stuff. And just keep your focus on the idea that I'm here, and I didn't say this to them, but here to live, as a spiritual being. So, you got to think about when Jesus began his ministry, he called into service individuals in which he recognized crude, unrefined spiritual potential that could assist him in what he was trying to accomplish. Because when he called each one of these disciples, they had no idea that they had this ability within themselves, but that was Jesus's power, so to speak, as he could see into the soul and spirit of the people around him. So he called these people into service. Now notice, he called them to assist him in his spiritual mission, which means he saw something in them that would help him to do what he needed to do. And it's the same with each one of us. Mostly unconsciously, we're calling into service people and relationships with us that are there to help us to awaken to our own spiritual dynamics. Now, we didn't know that, right? You hook up with somebody, and a lot of times the people we hook up with are not people we have very good relationships with, but we don't understand that the reason why we're in that relationship is because there is something that I need to awaken to within myself, okay? This is getting off a little bit, but how many people saw Harriet? Oh, my God. Was that not mind-blowing or what? Okay. The part I liked is when she went back because she thought she was going back for her husband. But then it hit her after she had that little thing. It hit her that her husband was just the motivator to get her to do what she's supposed to be doing. The other thing that was powerful in it that I don't know how many people got is when she stepped in front of that little boy and got that crack in her forehead right here, that's where the third eye is. And once that cracked and opened up, then she was able to actually speak to God directly. I don't know how people pick that up when they were watching a movie. But anyway, that's sort of the idea of, her relationships in that thing became the process by which she became who she is. What we know that she did for us. So the key here is we are always, everybody that we are in relationship with, even if it's for a moment, you stop by somebody on the street, something happens in a store, or long-term relationships, whatever they are all there to help us to wake up to our own untapped divine potential. Because we, like the disciples, are in a crude, unrefined spiritual way. Okay, and we're trying to polish up our whole spiritual process. Now, the difference between us and Jesus is that Jesus knew what he was doing. Okay? But now you know what you're doing. You know, once you hear the truth, what you cannot unhear the truth. Okay? And so you kind of help you to understand that this is why I'm in a relationship and doing what I'm doing. Now, we looked at how, for the most part, faith is in the beginning is looked at more as like more like trust for most of us. Okay? It's more like trust. It's like believing in God. So people who have this say, well, I believe in God. Well, there's a difference between believing in God and knowing God. Okay? So for the beginning, most of us are at the level of believing in God, striving to reach the level of consciousness where we truly know that God is alive and active in our life and affairs, where it's not a thought. Because a lot of times you'll say, well, I just need to have faith. Okay? Now, the fact that you said that means that you're kind of not sure about it. You know what I'm saying? When you're really in that space, you don't have to say, I need to have faith. You're just there. You're just in that space, okay? So you will find that when you're truly dedicate yourself to the practice of the presence of God, when you truly, that's what you always think about all the time, no matter what's going on, your life and affairs will begin to transform you into that space. So it's sort of the practice of the process gets you into the mindset of doing it all the time. And once you do it all the time, then you transform into a place where, like the guy I just explained to you, when somebody says something, there's nothing that goes off in your mind that says, I should react to that. Is that making sense? Now, in the beginning, yes, you're going to say, I'm reacting to that. But the key is that you caught yourself reacting to it. All right? Whereas before, we were asleep. Like I keep telling my students, but one thing that will happen to you in this class or this semester is you will awake. All right. By the end of the semester, you will not be the same person who's sitting there at this point. 15 weeks from now, you're going to be a totally different person. Now, of course, they're looking at me like, but in addition to looking at their phone and their this and that, like, oh, yeah, right. Okay. But 15 weeks of hearing what I teach over and over again, you know, marketing up here and spiritual principles under here, they begin to awaken to a whole different part of themselves. So we want to get to this place where we have the strength to live the spiritual life. Now, doesn't it take strength to live the spiritual life? Absolutely. Okay? Now, in the Old Testament, Samson, in the book of Judges, he represented strength. Now, metaphysically, Samson represented physical strength managed by spiritual discipline. Everybody follow that? Okay? Now, the life of Samson is explained in the book of Judges. It represents the different movements of strength in human consciousness. So, for example, destructive, heartless strength exhibited by fear versus constructive, compassionate strength exhibited by love. So it's sort of this idea a spiritual principle can be, the spiritual dynamics within us can actually be used for evil. And that's why God said in the Old Testament, I give you life and I give you death. Now, I suggest you choose life, but if you want to choose death, that's your choice. See, you follow me? So that's the whole process here is we got to understand that this spiritual dynamic that I have within me, if I misuse it, it becomes very destructive. And I can misuse it. Because the ego gets a hold of it and makes a whole other thing out of it. So love, which we said before, is pure. The ego gets a hold of it and makes it conditional. Then it's no longer love. Is that making sense? Okay. So, you know, in the New Testament now, so Old Testament, we thought of Samson. New Testament is represented by the disciple Andrew. And Andrew stands for stability and steadfastness. Now, the Greek meaning of Andrew is strong man, which means one who is strong in mind. It's significant to note here that Andrew and his brother Peter were called at the same time. So Peter represents faith and Andrew strength. And Jesus called them both at the same time. This suggests that one must have a strong mind to remain steadfast and stable in faith and faith in the face of all the things that are happening in your life. So yes, you can have faith, but if you don't have strength to go with it, what happens to faith? It starts to waver, okay? So again, as we discussed before, there is a human belief about strength and a spiritual knowing of strength. The first places its trust in that which is linear or can be proven or demonstrated over time. So a lot of times what we're putting our faith in is stuff that we know can happen. All right? We have had experience with it before. We have seen it somehow in our minds. We know it can happen. So human belief about faith is based on human perceptions limited to the knowledge and understanding of the human intellect. It's what the intellect can perceive. So one of the things that was in this film is he showed a picture of the iPad person. Tell me, who created the iPad? Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs and William Klein. And he was asking the students, do you know who they are? Well, yes, everybody knew Steve Jobs, but I didn't even know the face of William Klein, who created Windows. But he was showing how Steve Jobs demonstrated so much spiritual energy because he was creating things that there were no precedent for. You know what I'm saying? A lot of stuff that's created today is copied. But Steve Jobs was coming up with stuff that there was nothing that existed like it. So was he demonstrating a pure spiritual dynamic? You see what I'm saying? So that's the key here, is how do I tap into that energy that I have faith in of something that nobody else is believing is even possible? That's what we're talking about, okay? So again, the spiritual knowing of strength is centered in faith that there is a power and presence that operates in my life and affairs that's far greater than anything that may be physically challenging me. In other words, spiritual knowing gives you the strength to have faith in the face of any trial or tribulation. Spiritual knowing detaches us from placing our faith in physical things such as possessions, jobs, or finances. You got a fat bank account, you feel good. Your bank account goes down, you ain't feeling so good. All right? Because you put your faith in what? The wrong thing, okay? Spiritual knowing, however, gives you the strength to have the faith to know that regardless of the physical appearances, there is only one power and one presence operating in my life and affairs. There is only one power and one presence operating in my life and affairs. Say that with me. There is only one power and one presence operating in my life and affairs. We say that every week. But when stuff pops up that we can't figure out, that's when you need to go back to the affirmation. Okay? So now right now we seek to protect ourselves with psychological armor, I'm calling it. You're made out of things like the conditions, positions, things in our life that we think we have control over. You know, remember last week, the story I told, how many people were here last week? Okay, so I was telling a story of the movie Instinct, where Anthony Hopkins, who is a psychotic killer, grabs up Cuba Gooding, who's supposed to be a psychologist, and he's choking the life out of him. And he says to him, what have I just taken away from you? And so the psychiatrist writes down, my freedom. And he says, wrong answer, you never were free. And he keeps choking him, and he says, you got to tell me. He writes down, my control. He goes, wrong answer, you never did have control. So now he's really choking him, the guy's about to die, and he writes down, my illusions, to which the killer kisses him on the cheek and says, right answer. My illusions. You got it? So what I'm saying, right, there's a lot of things that we fear are really an illusion. Okay? Now, the scary part of it is just like on that Star Trek thing I keep telling you about, with these big-headed creatures that were, really brilliant, they were all brain and almost no body, were creating illusions for the Star Trek crew of monsters coming, and one of them said, well, we know it's just an illusion, but the other one said, yes, it's an illusion, but if you don't fight it, it will kill you. Because if you believe that these things in your life are real, you've got to do that thing which your ego knows to do in order to protect yourself. You follow me? So to get to that point where it's an illusion, man, that takes a lot of work. And I'm not saying that because it's part of my talk. I'm saying that because I tell you, the stuff that I write, I practice to see where I am with it. And I know that there are things that I've got. I got that. And there's other stuff that I ain't got. Right? So that's sort of understanding that dynamic. So, we cover ourselves with this psychological armor. Now, As we grow in spiritual consciousness, we begin to learn that the only armor that truly protects us is the armor of pure light, which is the pure knowing that only God is real and everything else is just a manifestation of my consciousness. Okay? Now, there's no armor we can accumulate in terms of material things and outer conditions that can protect us from everything. There's nothing. Even if you're the richest person in the world, Jeff Bezos, you can't have armor in the material world that can protect you against everything. Okay? So, as it's written in Luke 11:21-22, when a strong man, fully armed, guards his own house, his possessions appear to be safe. But when someone stronger attacks and overpowers him, he takes away the armor in which the man trusted and then divides up the spoils. All right? So, for example, Goliath, as described in 1 Samuel 17, is a representative of one who placed great trust in his strength of his armor. Not only I was looking, they were saying that, you know, they give it in centimeters or something, but he was supposed to be 6'7" and loaded down with all this armor. Okay? Massive giant comes out. Now, this represents the illusion of safety and protection we get from material conditions, possessions, and attachments. If I got a lot of stuff, I'm good. All right? And you feel protected. Goliath felt safe because of his size, his physical strength, and his armor. I love to tell the story of our friend Big Dave McElwain. You've heard me talk about him before, right? Big Dave, 6'3", 330 pounds of muscle. Could bench press 315 for 20 reps as a warm-up, right? But I was telling my class about him, and he roared. He was big, and he roared, and he was scary. But he was scary on the outside because he was frightened on the inside. You know, because we became very close to him. He came out of our house, and he said, "Yeah, somebody said something. He hurt my feelings." This big, massive man. Right? To hear him, that little voice go, "He hurt my feelings." Okay? And all of us do that in some way. You know, we're all not as big as Big Dave McElwain, but every one of us has this thing we put on that says, "Don't mess with me." Don't we? All right? So the key is, you know, the one who defeated him, however, was smaller, you know, unconvincing in appearance, and had no obvious material armor, right? So Goliath represents the human ego, which places its trust in human prowess. David, however, represents one who has learned the importance of mastering the spiritual life over the physical life. He focuses his attention on knowing the power and presence of spirit rather than the perception of power that comes from the many delusions of physical armor that we all have a tendency to accumulate. So we have mentally, emotionally covered ourselves with the armor of our beliefs, opinions, and our resistance to change just as readily as we've covered ourselves with the armor of our physical possessions and delusions of power and position. All right? So the key is David represents our spiritual ability to see the weakness of the armor in our humanness, our possessiveness. He sees that weakness. And instead of dealing with that weakness is what makes him strong, he remains very much in tune with spirit. But we all have experienced how trust in our material stuff, you know, it may have worked for a while, but when the armor in which we have entrusted our feelings and safety and security breaks down, we begin to experience a series of fearful emotions. Has everybody in here had that? You know, things are going well, job's going well, whatever, and all of a sudden things change, and you're like, man. And they can change overnight. Yeah, just like that. Okay? So, you know, those whose minds favor the physical over the spiritual would have placed their bets on the strength of Goliath to defeat the appearance of the weakness in David, right? You see these two guys coming out, and everybody's like, "Oh, yeah, my money's on Goliath." Probably nobody would bet on David. Okay. And this is why Jesus taught us in John 7:24, do not judge by appearance, but judge righteous judgment. All right. It's just like in my class that I have now, there's a very young looking, she might even be a high school, I'm not even sure, because we have high school students in our classes. Timid, doesn't look up. But she, when I asked the class and I challenge her with something, she's the one who comes back with the strongest answers. But if I looked out, I would think that she was the one who wouldn't say much. All right? So you can't judge by appearance. You have to judge righteous judgments. So only if you're open and receptive to a form of truthful expression, which is not always obvious by material standards, will you be capable of perceiving the power of strength that's represented by David as being ultimately superior, rather than looking at the physical strength of Goliath as being ultimately superior. So in our lives, that's a really difficult dichotomy, because right now, even as we are hearing this, we still will put most of our faith in the physical world. Am I right? Okay. How many people watch New Amsterdam? Okay. This is a hospital in New York. Matter of fact, my brother-in-law used to be the real hospital in New York. He was the controller for them back in the day. But they had a situation where in the lobby, there's a prayer group that came and sat in the lobby and were doing prayer. So, of course, the police said, do you want us to get them out of here? And the head of the hospital said, no, just leave them. Let them do what they do. So they were doing their prayer. And now through the hospital, patients who were struggling with things that the doctors couldn't figure out how to heal were all of a sudden healing. And they couldn't explain it, why this was happening. Because they were putting all their faith in the physical, medical. And these folks sitting in the lobby, about 20 of them, were putting all their faith in spirit. And they just kept having these incidences where people were healing. Then all of a sudden they have a situation where one person who had healed from something they couldn't figure out how to heal from began to falter. And when the head of the hospital passed by the lobby, the prayer people were gone. So that's why when Jesus would heal, he would kind of say to the people, you got to stick with this healing. You got to stick with the fact that your mind has been changed. If you go back to how you were, what I just did is worthless. All right? And so the doctor went out into the street looking for these folks and said, I need you to come back. I need you to come back. One of my patients needs you. And the guy looked at me and said, you got to understand, we didn't really do anything. He said, if you want to go back and you want that patient to be healed, you have to be the one who takes that healing back. Isn't it? All right? So we have to be the mechanism for that. So many of you know the story of how in the early days of Unity, real, real early days, back in the 1800s, they were running out of money, and people in Unity said, we have to, have our faith that hope that the money holds out. And Charles and Myrtle Fillmore says, no, we have to know that our faith will hold out. All right? Faith will trump the physical world every time. But you've got to really be, tied into it. So it's important to know that God is never holding back your good. You know why? Because God can't hold back your good. God is a divine activity in the universe that is always flowing from the unmanifest to the manifest. God, that activity we call God, this divine presence, wants to manifest. But it can only manifest how? Through us. So when you say to yourself, oh, God, this is what I need in my life, God says, oh, good, here. But you're asking at this level, and God is giving at this level. You know why? Because what you ask for, you need to be at that level in order to receive it. So we ask in our little mind down here, but God says, you need to have a little bit bigger mind because you asked for a big answer to your prayer. So you got to move your consciousness from here to here. And so we're asking down here, we're waiting down here, and all the while the stuff that we want is up here. Is that making sense? Okay, so that's why we need to let go of where we are and let God bring us to where we need to be. Okay, so that's the conscious process of it. And this takes strength and courage and patience and steadfastness. And we are not just talking about physical strength. We're referring to the strength of your mind to keep every thought focused on the fact that God is the only power and presence in my life. God is the only thing that I'm going to believe in, that I'm going to hold to. And Goliath has a further symbolism. He represents those dominant, fearful thoughts that loom large in your mind. Who's got some thoughts looming large in your mind? You know what I'm talking about, right? That stuff that you saw. Now, Courtney gave us, you know, if you listen to, remember I tell you, listen to a McDonald's commercial, you, even if you don't eat McDonald's, you can't get that thought out of your mind. You should keep that song that Courtney just sang in your mind. Because that's a tune, there's a vibration that happens when somebody sings like that, that just touches your soul, all right? Especially when you're here right with that person as they're doing it, it touches your soul. And you just let that vibration keep going, and that's what you keep that thought going in your mind the whole time. So Goliath represents those fearful thoughts that loom large in your mind, those thoughts which dare you to oppose them, right? They're usually the thoughts about breaking free of some addictive behavior or abusive situation or moving from a place of or position a job that you no longer want. You know, I don't even want to ask you to raise your hand, but how many people stay in jobs that they hate, right, and just don't have the nerve to leave? You know, and in this film that I showed the student, that said, and you've heard this before, more people die at 9 o'clock on Monday morning than any other time. Hating to go to work. So I said to my students, I said, one of the things I want to help you to understand is don't go through school and do a major in something that you don't like. You're just doing it because your parents told you, somebody else said. Do what you love to do. You know, figure out. And so I asked them the question. This is interesting. Which I've asked each semester. If you had a job making $500,000 a year and a job you hated, and a job making $50,000 a year and a job you loved, which would you take? Now, previous years, students always chose the $500,000 job. These students surprised me. They said, no, because she said, as millennials, we want to be living a life that we love living. We don't want to be stuck in some office somewhere. And so Sasha Strauss, one of my favorite motivational speakers, he said that, you know, corporations are saying to these millennials, why aren't you listening to me? You know, we're trying to sell you this stuff. Why aren't you listening? And millennials are saying, because you're not talking our language. See, corporations and organizational structures are still in the old paradigm. And this new group coming up are on a totally different mindset. You know, they are probably much more open to spirit than we have ever been. They might not say that I'm open to spirit, but are probably much more open to spirit than we have ever been. So the strong man in this verse, you know, that we read earlier about, you know, strong man protecting his house, that's the Goliath thought that shields itself by using fear to protect its position, its mind, and its individual structure. And we do that. We protect ourselves. Right, we're not really open and receptive. We kind of keep ourselves protected. Okay, so the Goliath thought comes to think that its position is safe because its mind inhibits it and keeps it from, you know, falling apart. It says, and that's what we all have. We have mechanisms to keep us from falling apart. You know what I'm talking about, right? One show I was watching, a guy pops a rubber band on his wrist. That every time he feels himself getting fearful, he pops that rubber band. But we all have some kind of rubber band we pop on our wrists when we feel ourselves falling into fear. How do I keep myself strong? And each of us have our own Goliath thoughts that we have come to believe are too big to overcome. But then there's David. I love that. You know, the stuff that's going on in our head, this is too big to overcome. But then there's David, who represents a stronger, more courageous thought in our mind that gives us the strength to overpower our fears. And I repeat, this parable is so apropos because David does not in any way give us hope as a casual observer that he can overcome the inner workings of Goliath. You get it? Right? So you got this thing going on in your head and you're going, and this little thought comes up and says, but you know, this is how you could go about that. And you kind of, oh, no, that ain't going to work. All right? So the typical human mind, steeped in the belief that the material world is a true reality, would look for outer solutions that will appear to solve their problems. And that is the way of the human mind. It works, it becomes entrenched in a belief system that it has a hard time getting out of. And Charles Fillmore calls that crystallized race consciousness. We're in crystallized race consciousness. So why is it so hard for us to follow the spiritual path? Because we're in crystallized race consciousness. Something's got to break that thought process in order to, for us to grow, be free enough to go in a different direction. Okay? And so the key here is we're always looking for the big answer. But if you read in 1 Kings 19, 11, 12, Elijah was told this. He says, go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. And then a great and powerful wind tore the mountain apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, there was a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And then after the fire was a still, small, gentle voice. That was the Lord. And so all those other things, earthquakes, fires, all the stuff that happens in our lives, that's what we look at. But we need to be still and listen for that still, small voice. That's the way of the Lord. So I want you to keep that in mind. I'm going to end with this. When you decide to face the giant in your mind, is everybody ready? Okay. And that is the decision that you alone must make. Because we will come for counseling, and we will come for all kinds of things, and we'll say, oh, this is what's going on in my head. But to really deal with that Goliath thought, it's something you have to be, I have to be, willing to do. All right? So when that happens, turn to Psalm 46:10, which gently directs you to quicken your power of strength by becoming still and knowing the strength of the Lord. And that will defeat Goliath every time. Amen.